Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Katie has a story about a scientific misunderstanding about a distant planet in our own solar system. Jill Robbins and John Russell explain verb tenses on Everyday Grammar. Then, Jill returns with Andrew Smith for the lesson of the day. But first,
in 1781, German-born British astronomer William Herschel made Uranus the first planet discovered with a telescope. But 243 years later, we still do not know much about this cold planet, the third largest in our solar system. And some of what we thought we knew about it turns out to be untrue. Much of the knowledge about Uranus was collected when NASA's robotic spacecraft, Voyager 2, flew past it in 1986. But scientists have since learned that the craft visited at a time of unusual conditions. An intense solar wind event at the time led to misleading observations about Uranus, and especially its magnetic field. The solar wind is a high-speed flow of charged particles coming from the sun. The researchers took a second look at 8 months of data from around the time of Voyager 2's visit and found that it flew near Uranus just a few days after the solar wind had reduced the planet's magnetosphere to about 20% of its usual size. A magnetosphere is an area of space surrounding a planet that is controlled by the planet's magnetic field. The magnetosphere protects the planet from solar and cosmic particle radiation. The Voyager 2 observations led scientists to think Uranus's magnetosphere lacked in plasma and had very intense belts of highly energetic electrons. Plasma is often called the fourth state of matter, after solids, liquids, and gases. In the night sky, plasma gives out light in the form of stars, nebulas, and even the auroras above the North and South Poles. Plasma is a common feature in the magnetosphere of other planets, so scientists did not understand why there would not be much of it observed around Uranus. Jamie Jasinski studies space plasma at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He is the lead writer of the study, published recently in the publication Nature Astronomy. We found that the solar wind conditions present during the flyby only occur 4% of the time. The flyby occurred during the maximum peak solar wind intensity in that entire 8-month period, Jasinski said. We would have observed a much bigger magnetosphere if Voyager 2 had arrived a week earlier. Such a visit would likely have shown that the Uranus magnetosphere is like those of Jupiter, Saturn, and Neptune, the solar system's other large planets, the researchers said. Uranus looks blue-green because of the methane contained in its atmosphere. The planet is big enough to fit 63 Earths inside it. Among the solar system's 8 planets, only Jupiter and Saturn are larger. Uranus orbits almost 20 times further from the Sun than Earth does. And it has 28 known moons and 2 sets of rings. Data collected by Voyager 2 had suggested that its 2 largest moons, Titania and Oberon, often orbit outside the magnetosphere. But the new study shows that they usually stay inside the protective space, making it easier for scientists to magnetically detect possible subsurface oceans. Both are thought to be prime candidates for hosting liquid water oceans in the Uranian system. Jet Propulsion Laboratory planetary scientist and study co-writer Corey Cochran said. Scientists want to learn whether subsurface oceans on moons in the outer solar system have conditions that could support life. So, on October 14, NASA launched a spacecraft on a mission to Jupiter's moon Europa to try to answer that question. A future mission to Uranus is crucial to understanding not only the planet and magnetosphere, but also its atmosphere, rings, and moons, Jasinski said. I'm Katie Weaver.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Today, we are going to give you a basic overview of the verb tense system in English. Verb tenses tell us how an action relates to the flow of time. There are 3 main verb tenses in English: present, past, and future. The present, past, and future tenses are divided into 4 aspects: the simple, progressive, perfect, and perfect progressive. There are 12 major verb tenses that English learners should know. English has only 2 ways of forming a tense from the verb alone: the past and the present. For example, we drove and we drive. To form other verb tenses, you have to add a form of have, be, or will in front of the verb. These are called helping or auxiliary verbs.
Verb tenses can be difficult to learn in a foreign language. Different cultures think different ways about time. Chinese, for example, has no grammatical verb tenses. Other languages, like Indonesian, express time only through adverbs. There are no changes to the verb form. English verb tenses give many details about time and action, such as: is the action finished? How long did the action happen? Was the action repeated? Did the action happen at a known or unknown time? Is the action a habit? Is the action planned or spontaneous? It is difficult to think about time distinctions that do not exist in your own language. So, it can take many years for English learners to master verb tenses. Let's get started. We are going to give examples of all 12 verb tenses using the verb drive.
We'll start with the simple tenses. These are probably the first tenses you learned in English. Simple tenses usually refer to a single action. In general, simple tenses express facts and situations that existed in the past, exist in the present, or will exist in the future. Simple present.
I drive home every day.
Simple past.
I drove home yesterday.
Simple future.
I will drive home later. Let's go on to the progressive tenses. We use progressive tenses to talk about unfinished events. Progressive tenses are also called continuous tenses. Past progressive.
I was driving when you called.
Present progressive.
I am driving now.
Future progressive.
I will be driving when you call. Now let's look at the perfect tenses. Perfect tenses cause the most confusion. To put it simply, they express the idea that one event happens before another event. There are many tricky exceptions with the perfect tenses, which we will discuss in a future episode. The adverbs never, yet, and already are common in perfect tenses. Present perfect.
I have driven that road.
Past perfect.
I had already driven that road in the past.
Future perfect.
I will have driven 200 miles by tomorrow. Finally, let's look at the perfect progressive tenses. Generally, perfect progressive tenses express duration, or how long. Perfect progressive tenses usually include the adverbs for or since. Present perfect progressive.
I have been driving since this morning.
Past perfect progressive.
I had been driving for 3 hours before I stopped to get gas.
Future perfect progressive.
I will have been driving for 5 hours by the time I arrive.
Don't worry if you don't understand everything yet. Here are some recommendations we have for learning verb tenses.
First, think of adverbs as your friends. Adverbs of time offer valuable clues about the correct verb tense. Let's use the adverb ago. Ago is only used in the simple past, as in, I left home 3 years ago. The adverb ago is never used in the present perfect. Certain adverbs occur with certain verb tenses. English learners sometimes try to impress people by using complex verb tenses. You often have a choice of several verb tenses. When you do, always choose the simplest one. It will be clear for your listener, and there is less chance of making a mistake.
Native speakers don't think consciously about verb tenses. With enough practice, English learners can internalize the verb tense system too. Instead of worrying about deep time relationships, try using adverbs and your ear to choose the right verb tense. Often when someone asks a question, you can respond in the same verb tense. We'll ask a question in each verb tense. Give an answer in the same tense, then listen to our answer. Ready? Did you get enough sleep last night?
Yes, I slept well.
Do you shower every day?
Yes, I shower every day.
Are you going to study tonight?
Yes, I'm going to study tonight.
What were you doing when I called you last night?
I was eating dinner when you called me last night.
What are you doing right now?
I am practicing verb tenses right now.
What will you be doing at midnight on New Year's Eve?
I will be celebrating the New Year with my friends. Had you ever tried skiing before today?
Yes, I had already done it several times before.
Have you ever broken the law?
No, I have never broken the law.
Will you have gotten married by the time you turn 30?
No, I will not have gotten married by the time I turn 30.
How long had you been smoking before you quit?
I had been smoking for 2 years before I quit.
How long have you been waiting for the bus?
I have been waiting for the bus for 20 minutes.
How long will you have been working before you retire?
I will have been working for 30 years before I retire.
This is just a basic introduction to verb tenses. In the following weeks, we will cover the more difficult verb tenses in more detail. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
You are listening to the VOA Learning English podcast. You just heard our everyday grammar program about verb tenses. We have Dr. Jill with us today to discuss it some more. Jill, what is it that makes English verb tenses difficult for some learners?
I think it's the way English tenses give so much information about not just the time of an action, but the actor's relationship to it.
Isn't that the same as in other languages?
Well, you know about Chinese, which has no grammatical tense. In Chinese, you can say that an action is completed. But I think what makes it difficult is understanding the fine shades of meaning you can communicate with different tenses in English.
Can you give an example?
Let's say you call me around lunchtime. I pick up the phone and you ask me if I want to go out for lunch with some coworkers.
Do you want to go out for lunch with us?
Right. Now, I can choose to answer in a few different ways, while staying in forms of the past tense. I can say, I was just eating.
Then I'd know you are not interested in going out, and maybe I interrupted you.
Yes, that is the past continuous, which we use for an ongoing action when another action happened. But what if I say, I just ate lunch, the simple past tense, or I have eaten lunch, the present perfect tense?
Then I don't feel so bad. I know you finished eating, so I haven't interrupted you, but I know you won't go out to lunch with us.
Now, imagine I answer with, I had planned to eat at my desk. That's the past perfect tense.
That means you might change your mind and come out to eat.
Right. I can always bring my lunch along and enjoy the company of my friends in the office. Thanks for having me on the show, Mario.
Thank you, Dr. Jill. It's always fun to talk with you about English grammar.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
My name is Anna Mateo.
And my name is Andrew Smith.
My name is Jill Robbins. You're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our video series, Level 2 of Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
Today, we're going to talk about Lesson 4, when Anna and Pete go to see a circus. They show us some ways to politely disagree and state our opinions.
As you may remember from our previous podcast, Ms. Weaver had asked Anna and Pete to do a new program where they give different opinions on a topic. We can listen to the beginning of that program as we start Lesson 4.
Hello, I'm Anna.
And I'm Pete. Welcome to He Said,
She Said.
Because there are always two sides
to every story. Today's show is about circus arts.
Circus? That's not an art form.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
I think Pete and Anna have different ideas about what an art form is. But we don't know what they are yet. They are disagreeing in a very simple way, as we heard.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Kind of a boring way to disagree. In this lesson, we learn about some more interesting ways to disagree by politely giving your opinion and supporting it with examples.
So let's listen to how Pete supports his opinion.
Recently, I went to a circus festival. There was a huge circus tent and many different circus performers. It was a celebration of circus arts.
That looks fun, Anna, but I don't think circus performers are artists. I think they're athletes with interesting skills and costumes.
Pete supported, or we might say backed up, his opinion with more information about the circus performers. He is giving a reason for thinking the way he does. This is an important point for English learners who want to develop their writing and speaking skills. When you give an opinion or argue a point, you should provide support for that opinion.
And when you have a different opinion, you can choose to politely say a different opinion, the way Anna does.
That is a very interesting point of view, Pete, and I completely disagree.
And back to supporting your opinion, there are several ways. One is to state facts. Pete says the performers have skills and wear costumes.
You can also support your opinion with statistics or numbers. Another way is to give examples. Listen to how Pete continues to support his opinion.
Anna, Michelangelo was an artist. Rembrandt was an artist. People who swing from ropes are not artists. I know it's not easy to swing from a bar and catch someone by the hand. You have to be very athletic to do that.
What do you think, listeners? I believe he's giving some examples of people he considers artists. Then he gives an example of an athletic activity, swinging from a bar and catching someone.
You may have noticed that Pete mispronounced the names of the artists Michelangelo and Rembrandt. That's a way of showing that Pete really might not understand very much about what makes something artistic or what makes someone an artist. When you're having a disagreement, as Anna and Pete are here, it's important to listen to the other person's argument and see if you can find some point of agreement. Do you think Anna will do that? Let's listen.
That's a good point, Pete. They are athletic, but they are called trapeze artists. Trapeze artists.
I hear what you're saying, Anna, I do, but where is the art? Look at these guys. They're jugglers.
Yes, they are skilled in the art of juggling.
They have a special skill, but are they artists? No.
Yes.
They're just throwing things back and forth.
Kind of like you and me, Pete. We're going back and forth on this issue.
I don't think we'll ever agree on this one.
No, but we can agree that these young people are amazing.
Okay, yeah, we can agree on that. But still, they are very athletic, flipping and throwing each other around.
Yes, I agree with you on that point.
Notice that Anna said, "That's a good point," to show she is listening to Pete's argument. Pete and Anna are still going back and forth with the art question, but they both think the young performers are amazing. And Anna tells Pete she agrees in this way.
Yes, I agree with you on that point.
When you have a disagreement with someone, it's sometimes helpful to get a third person involved. We find that one of the circus performers has an idea to support Anna's opinion.
You know, Pete, let's let the performers speak for themselves. Kate and Piper tell stories while hanging upside down on a ring.
Was it hard to interview them upside down?
I interviewed them right side up, Pete. Kate says circus performing may be athletic, but it's not competitive. With most sports, you compete.
It's an art form because, like other sports, you're competing. This is simply performing and having fun.
Okay. Kate made a really good point. In athletics, there's a lot of competition. But still.
Here's Piper, Pete.
Well, when you're up in the air doing circus, you have to perform. And so we learn to embody characters and to move fluidly and gracefully in artistic ways.
And that is why they are artists.
You're right, Anna. Oh, you're right. It's just so beautiful.
I know. I know, Pete.
Pete is seeing from Anna's point of view, I think, with the help of Piper and Kate. It seems one important difference they see is that athletes are competing while the performers are having fun, not trying to do their performance faster than others, for example.
It's an art form because, like other sports, you're competing. This is simply performing and having fun.
Yeah, and the other difference is that the circus performers are becoming a character. Essentially, they are acting.
Well, when you're up in the air doing circus, you have to perform. And so we learn to embody characters and to move fluidly and gracefully in artistic ways.
That may be a new word for you. Embody. It's spelled E-M-B-O-D-Y. It means to give form to an idea, like when you make a symbol or an example of something. Here, Piper is talking about expressing or becoming a character.
I think it's time for us to give our listeners their assignment for this lesson. Choose a topic that people are talking about where you live, or pick one from our activity sheet in Lesson 4. Write to us with your opinion on the topic and support it with at least two reasons: facts, statistics, or examples.
You can email us at learningenglish@voanews.com or put your comments on our YouTube video for this podcast. And it'll be great if you share the lesson of the day with your friends and family. Remember that you can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our show for today. But join us again tomorrow to keep learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm...